specifically for horse racing. Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back. Second half on this Black Eyed Susan day, and the activity ratcheting up, and the sun's come out. It was a little bit of an overcast morning, and I haven't checked back, but everything indicates that we're going to be dry tomorrow. So some of those concerns were misplaced, it appears, and also appearing, James Scully joins us now. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. That's fantastic news about the weather. And it started looking more favorable, you know, all week. A week ago, the forecast didn't look like there could be rain every day this weekend. So glad to hear that, and hope you're having a good time in Baltimore.
Always, always love coming here, and looking forward to some thoughts from you. And how did the first mission scratch affect your approach?
Well, you know, I think it. I was going to play National Treasure in First Mission in an exacta box, and I just think, now it's just, I'll probably just take a stand with National Treasure and, like, multi-race wagers. You know, I don't have anything against Mage. I worry about him, like, not getting out of the gate, and National Treasure. You know, I mean, obviously, in the Preakness, you have a situation where you have right now just one horse, number four, Coffee with Chris, that looks like he's really capable of putting any kind of pace pressure on. So all the late runners in the field and our stalkers and off the pace types would love to see that horse go forward. But I think it's a real possibility that National Treasure just seizes control and he gets out there at a real easy pace. Oxbow went like 48 and change when he went wire to wire. And, we've seen a lot of, I think, eight of the last 10 Preakness winners, with the exception of like really Ron Bauer and Exaggerator, were early presser type. So National Treasure looks like he has an advantage with the first mission scratching to me, Steve.
Well, he's got to prove good enough. And let's also see if anybody, everybody's going to understand this. I mean, all the connections, and see, who's eligible to, to get aggressive and try to utilize some speed. I would think that IRAD might even, now being the, the horse that's outposted, you would think that Blazing Sevens wants to, you know, maybe utilize the scenario to, you know, to get into a forward stalking position.
Yeah, and if Mage, Mage may break perfectly, and if he does, that's just a real feather in his cap, and he'd have a great chance if he's just out there just tracking, stalking up close National Treasure on the lead. He's going to be in position, you would think, turning for home, and you know, horses that run well in the Derby have an edge in the Preakness typically. You know, these trainers have talked about it, Baffert, Lucas, you know, they can just bounce forward into the Preakness. You know, you just stay out of their way and keep them happy. So Mage has that going for him in a sense. And I'd like to see him break better because I think, you know, that will make better drama. And, you know, if he does prove best in the Preakness in 3 weeks in New York, obviously.
Well, and it, again, I'll reference back. I had this conversation with Shap earlier. All you got to do is watch that maiden win when he essentially wires at 7 furlongs. He's capable. And you know, the more you watch that Derby break, it's not so much that he doesn't break, you know, comfortably and effectively. You watch, it feels like, you know, Castellano's design was to take back and save ground.
Yeah, I thought it was more pronounced in the Florida Derby than in the Churchill Downs. Yes,
there you go. All right, well, then let's shop around for some, you know, some other opportunities. I'm sure you've scoured the card.
Definitely, you know. You know, and I'll just work backwards from the Preakness if you want on Saturday's card. Is that okay?
Sure.
And the James Murphy, you know, it looks like Nazareth is going to be a big favorite to me, and it could have a pretty solid pace. But I'm not going to leave Wonderful Justice off of any of my tickets. I thought that colt was in the midst of a big run in the Transylvania. He got completely stopped. You know, I like horses that are training forwardly coming into this weekend, and this horse shows a, you know, a real fast drill in preparation, and I'm looking for him to improve upon, you know, that last race, and he's got a chance. Nazarok's adding blinkers, and you know, we'll see if that helps him, but you know, it's an equipment change. You know, he doesn't want to be too eager because there's some speed in this race to me with Fantastic Again, Top Recruit, even this Western Yarn, and Wonderful Justice could be the horse to me that gets the trip from off the pace and, you know, produces at the top of the stretch and finishes boldly. So I'm going to give him the edge in that James Murphy, Steve.
Well, you're the second. That I think Shap also had Wonderful Justice prominent.
Yeah, in the Maryland Sprint, you know, I mean, I'd be interested to see how much pace is, you know, develops in that race. I mean, I think a little bit of a wild card is this prevalence, you know, because he's trained real well apparently for Brendan Walsh, and I expect him to show speed from the inside, but there's obviously some other speed in that field. Nakatomi, I think has a shot from off the pace in there. I don't think he got the, he didn't fire for whatever reason in the Commonwealth, but you know, he's eligible to appreciate, I think, the cut back an extra furlong in a favorable pace scenario potentially in this race. You know, you have to respect Straight No Chaser as well, but I'm looking at Nakatomi and giving him a slight edge in that race, Steve, from off the pace.
I don't disagree. I'm glad you brought up Prevalence. I discussed him specifically with Dave Grenig. I thought his presence in the race was really interesting, and I spent probably way more time than I should have trying to figure out how eligible he was.
Yeah, well, I take a look at a horse like this, and I see these back-to-back bullet works, and I'm like, he's thrown inside with Ired Ortiz Jr., and you know, I like a late runner in there, but if I'm playing multi-race wagers, I'm going to throw the deuce on some tickets because I don't want to let that inside speed beat me.
There you go. All right.
Yeah, turning to the Turf Sprint, I mean, that's another tough race. I thought that five, Smoking Jay, you know, he ran a good second in this race last year. And, you know, he's got a race under his belt there at Keeneland, you know, where, you know, he didn't have the best of trips, I didn't think, that day from an inside post. And they were really rolling up front that day. And, you know, he was perhaps a little bit eager, too. So I look for him to get a better trip tomorrow in this race. And I'm going to give him a little bit of an edge. But that's I definitely don't have a real strong opinion.
All right.
And then in the Skip Bet Stakes, another race, you know, really, I thought a good wagering race. Number eight, Chitara, had a trouble trip, went third, two back. And, you know, just looks like, you know, that was an improved effort last time at Keeneland, I thought. And it looks like he could be building towards a big effort. You know, I don't know if he'll be good enough to win or not, but that's a horse I'm going to use on my tickets of any kind of vertical exotics, and I'll mix him in some multi-races, number eight, Chitara, in the Skip F Stakes.
All right.
And then I'm going to turn forward to the Chick Lang race, number six. That's a race where... And to me, that race is just loaded with speed. I mean, having a meltdown, Rivet was just dueling on a hot pace last time. And then, you know, Super Chow's a little bit fresh in this spot. And then Prove Right, you know, can really mix it up. Prince of Jericho is my top pick from off the pace with Sheldon Russell. I'm going to use him. And then I'm also going to get a little bit of Frosted Departure on like multi-race tickets on the cutback at distance. I think he's going to run well from off the pace with Flavian Pratt. So I'm 7-3 in that Chick Lang and playing against you know, some of these big favorites in there.
All right.
And turn into today's card. I really was bummed out with that scratch of that Maker Filly in the Barry One Stakes. I was looking forward to playing her. I thought in race number let me find that real quick. I'm sorry. Today at Pimlico, in the I liked actually in the Allaire DuPont. I don't know what to make of Interstate Daydreams, like two comeback ever. It's been a little bit disappointing. And Butterbean and or Falcon Inn and Butterbean are, you know, they've raced against each other before, are capable. But I'm going to give the edge to number one, La Da Vida. I like to stretch back out to nine furlongs. You know, I looked at her last race, and you know, I thought she was in position to make a run in that race and just sort of finished evenly, but. It wasn't a terrible, you know, she didn't run terribly at Oakmont Park. And I, with those races under her, I think she could appreciate this ground saving trip with Chetanod from the inside. I'm going to give her a slight edge in that Allaire DuPont, Steve.
It's, you don't want a race like that to have to, you know, utilize three multiples, but it seems prudent to respect all three of them in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with the moving on on today's card to the Barry One, I really thought the Thunder and Creed, you know, I don't mind that race on synthetic where, you know, they pass some horses and perhaps don't fare that well. I thought that was, you know, I'm going to draw a line straight through that and look back at her efforts last year in that Franklin Stakes and then that allowance race at Kentucky Downs. I thought those were real strong performances, and I think she's eligible to come back firing in there. I'm a little worried about, like, her world. I thought her last race, it was just an odd race where she really caught a huge breather in the middle stages, and looks like she'll take more pressure in there, even though she does have something going for her. But yeah, my top pick in the Barry One today is number five, Thunder and Creed.
All right.
And then I also like in the I liked Law Professor in the Dinner Party Stakes. You know,
the Pimlico Special.
The Pimlico Special. I'm gonna give him the edge in the Pimlico Special. I just think he'll get a good trip up close to the pace and rattle and roll. Has to avoid leaving himself too much to do. And in the Black Eyed Susan, I thought that race, you know, losing, it's lost some pace. I mean, I don't know what, exactly how, like, stiff that early pace is going to be. I look for, I'm gonna take a shot on comparative. I think she's going to be up close to it with Lee Saez coming off back-to-back wins at breaking her maiden at Fairgrounds and that allowance win at Keeneland last out. She appears to be training forwardly and is moving forward in terms of figures. She got a real strong number for that race at Keeneland last out on opening weekend. And I'm going to give number 7 comparative the edge in the Black Eyed Susan, Steve.
All right.
Who do you like in there?
I think Faiza is way the filly to beat, but I want Taxed. Taxed is the, for me, is the fun horse. I wanted her to draw into the Oaks desperately, as did Randy Morse, and then she follows up her preparations and comes back with a 59 flat bullet. I think she's sitting on go, and I don't know if she is good enough. She's going to have to speed up, make up probably 3-4 lengths on the top. You know, on the top choice at least, but you know, we've learned that there really isn't a lot separating all these fillies. But leading into the Oaks, Pretty Mischievous was my top choice, who I was most impressed with. But Taxed was literally, you know, hot on her heels in terms of making an impression. So we're going to take advantage of the opportunity and better here.
Hey, I got a last-second play today at Belmont Park. It's in race number 4. It's a short field, so not a huge odds. But this horse is the 4th choice on the morning line, running against a pair of Chad Brown horse that's the morning line favorite and a pair of Christophe Clements. I think they've all been sort of exposed in a sense. And I like number 5, Whimsical Dance, coming back today for Gail Cox in race 4 at Belmont Park. Listed at 5-1 on the morning line. It's number 5 in race 4. That's my last second plug of the day, Steve.
James Scully, everybody. The LSFP, the last second Friday push. James, good luck this week, and we'll do some recapping, and we'll see if we've got a Triple Crown try to build up to, and much more. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Best of luck to you.
James Scully, everybody. And sitting now, For his hand, you want that or the headset? You mind the headset? There you go. If you know, you're one of those guests. John Scheinman is going to sit in. You're one of those guests who I don't have to worry about their hair being affected by the headset.
I keep my head close cropped.
Close cropped.
To the inside of the inside follicles. If I knew you were going to have Scully on, I would have brought a pencil.
I'd take notes.
Copious notes. The guy's brilliant.
Yes, he is.
You know, he goes through, think about it, he just goes through two thick race cards. We're practically, we're exhausted just hearing the comprehensive nature of what he's saying. And then he's got one at Belmont. Too.
Well, it's
Gail Cox. Oh my God!
Now you get excited. That's a shtick. That's our last second Friday push. The LSFP. That about, I don't know, 2-3 years ago started. You know, he would say, you know, I got one other price today, and so it became, I put the little moniker on it, the LSFP.
I picture Gilbert Godfrey going, I have a little horse at Fort Erie that I might want to.
Exactly. That's exactly how this comes about. You know, you missed. I was angling to get you up here because there was a potential for one of those kismet style multi-person visits that happens on the show that we look forward to on the occasions. And so instead of that, I've got kind of a Jeopardy quiz for you, John Scheinman.
Oh,
name
God.
The once upon a time colleague of yours that covered the club boxing at the La Fontaine, Fontainebleau. What was it? The Lab.
Wait a minute. We're talking about
in Glen Burnie.
We're talking about Martin's West, Fontainebleau.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also there was Michael's 8th Avenue, which I worked on for two decades covering boxing.
Well, who did you cover boxing alongside? Ringside, ding, ding. What colleague, longtime colleague of yours, covered the boxing?
Alan Goldstein of the Baltimore Sun.
That's all right. That's fine. He's not in attendance here.
Who's in attendance today?
That you sat alongside. And he said you were wearing that same hat.
I'm drawing a blank because I'm barely awake. Who do you got?
Dave Grenning.
Oh, I'm going to take it a step back further. And I bet I have a cassette of this. A cassette of Dave Grenning and I on the radio together covering University of Maryland basketball when he was, I think he was still with the Diamondback, which was the school newspaper, and I was local writer for the Montgomery Journal. I think I have that cassette. And they had a new star named Brian Williams, who's, I think, gone now. We think he's dead. But he was making a coming out party with the Maryland Terrapins, and he went on and played with the pros. He was a very idiosyncratic guy, and I think he disappeared at sea. But Grenning and I did a halftime radio show together. And, yeah, I go further back than boxing with Dave.
That's unbelievable.
I go back to Dave when he was in college. Yeah.
Amazingly, I didn't bring it up with him.
You're shocked.
I am shocked because, I didn't know until today that he went to Maryland, that he went to College Park. And so that was a surprise. But now this, I mean, because I've got, you know, from my broadcast days at Colgate, I've got a reel to reel, and I've got one cassette of one was a playoff game against Northeastern.
Thank God we don't have a cylinder because we'd be really old.
You mean those long tubes? The I mean, I guess I could slip in my Lefty Drizel. We were at we had a friend getting married. And down here, who was in our baseball league, the Mid-Atlantic Rotisserie League, the Marl. And after the wedding, we all went to Rehoboth. And there was like eight or nine of us in one of those, you know, little beach houses. But you walked, you know Rehoboth? You must know Rehoboth.
Sure, sure.
So you walk downtown. And like on Friday, this was probably Saturday night already, because the wedding, I think, was on Friday night. So, yeah, and then we were there Saturday. They, the cars all, you know, get backed up. So we're walking, and, you know, people are in their cars, like, crawling.
Yeah.
And my buddy Phil looks over, and here's Lefty Drizel and his family driving to their beach house or whatever they were doing, or maybe to dinner, and Phil goes, "Wow, Lefty Drizel!" And the next thing we know, we're talking to Lefty, you know, as the car is, you know, inching forward.
That's my
Lefty Drizel story.
So just to finish up my part of this. So one of the most traumatic deaths in that era. It's like one of those deaths where you remember exactly where you were when you heard it.
Yeah.
Was when
Lenny Bias
passed. So what happens is Lenny Bias passed. Lefty's got to go, and Lefty's, you know, he's the king of College Park, but he's got to go because the program looks like it's potentially out of control, and they take me off of high school sports. And they go, "You're covering Maryland basketball now," right in the wake of Lenny's death. So so I get out there with, I'm in a pretty good newspaper, 5 day a week daily, with pretty good, it was really good actually. But it isn't the Washington Post, and it isn't the New York Times, and it isn't. So all of a sudden, you know, little John Scheinman is thrown into the wolves. Every single beat reporter there has deeply established sources in this, you know, top shelf college basketball program that's going through a wrenching death and dynamic changes and legal things and penalties from the NCAA when they actually took place before the players got paid and all this kind of stuff. And I got to go in there and I got to compete. It was a wake up call as a journalist to really, you got to hit the ground running, John, and you got to come up with some stories, and you don't have any sources. And it was really, it was a hell of an experience. But that's where I met Dave Groening.
Unbelievable. Dave's in the barn area, so he can't come and join us back. But I knew if I could have gotten the two of you together, it would have been a flashpoint. Speaking of which, some flashpoints, some thoughts from you as we get going here. We're now 35 minutes to the first post for Black Eyed Susan Day. And, you know, we're still here. We had Alan Foreman yesterday kind of walk us through everything. And Alan has, you know, been keeping us up to speed for ages on the status of what is likely to transpire, what the options are. Matt Hegarty wrote an extensive piece that, you know, but frankly, the hour we spent with Alan yesterday, you know, got into even more detail than the coverage. And there was some bizarre thing I saw Baltimore Banner.
Well, are you asking what the Baltimore Banner is?
Yeah,
it's a really outstanding new publication online that has taken all the reporters from the Baltimore Sun. Not all of them, of course, but they took a ton of the staff to the Sun. So you want to know how? Do you want a quick genesis of this?
Not really, but
It's good, but we'll leave it be. And it's interesting that we bring it up because Sam Zell, who used to own the Baltimore Sun, just died last night. So
is that right?
He died at 81. He was a real estate titan who decided to dabble in the newspaper world like these rich people do these days. And he did speak ill of the dead, but he didn't do a very good job running these newspapers, the Tribune Company, and it's been wrenching. I still work part time at the Baltimore Sun. But the Baltimore Banner's come on the scene to compete. It's an excellent, excellent publication.
The piece yesterday was preposterous.
I didn't read it.
It just was.
Won't get into it.
It was here. He is. Here's Groening, and it's unbelievable. I did what I promised that I was going to bring you up. It's in your jacket pocket. It's annoying as can be. He's got a tape of you. You and him on the radio.
Really?
What is this? This is your life, John. Yes. This is like your life. So what I have on cassette, Dave, is a conversation that you and I had at halftime of a Maryland basketball game when Brian Williams was cleaning it up, and you asked me if I would come in and do an interview with you. And then after the interview, I said, could you get me a cassette of that? And you did, and I never got rid of it.
That's
and
amazing.
I still have it. I mean, I dig it up. I'm going to find it and play it for you sometime.
No, you're going to play it on the show.
You know, we're going to play it on the show.
Yeah, we're going to vet that first. But you know what? You bring up Brian Williams. You know, when I was at Maryland, I went out to California. My father lived in California, and I went out to California. He was in high school there, and he was just about to commit to Maryland, and it was a big recruit for them, for a lefty. And no, I don't think it was lefty. And I got an interview. I went to his high school and got an interview with him at the high school before he came to Maryland.
That's primordial. That's really.
You know, I could have written off that trip, except I didn't have anybody to write it off to.
That conversation that you and I had that day, it was literally one of the first times that I'd ever done like some kind of radio gig. And I was so excited that we were doing this.
Right. I'm trying to figure out. I must have done it. I got to figure out who I was doing it for.
Were you doing play-by-play?
Well, you were with Diamondback.
I was at the Diamondback.
But why were we on the radio?
I'm not 100% sure. You know what? I might have done some work for WMUC, which was their college radio station.
I think it was
there.
MUC.
And who graduated from that program? Joe Tolleson, who is the PA announcer for the Rangers at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
It all comes full circle. It all comes back to hockey.
I'm 99% sure it was MUC. And you asked me if I... And I was like, me? Could you get Don Marcus?
That's why. God, that had been 35 years ago. In fact, I think my graduation, 35 years ago next week, I graduated from the University of Maryland. Get back to Scheinman. He's got good stuff for you.
Unbelievable. What did I tell you? I knew that putting the two of you together, and I only knew about his Maryland action two afternoons ago. We had lunch at Catonsville Gourmet.
If my elementary school teacher walks in the door right here,
that's right.
No, that was great. That was great.
Too fun. We got to get some goods here. Anyway, you'll see that piece. You'll see what I mean. It did the topic of MJC and where Maryland, what the options are. It did it no service.
There are journalistic outfits that have no business wading into horse racing, period. If you don't know a topic and you can't learn it, don't write about it.
It's funny that you bring. I didn't want to go careening into this, but
we'll talk about whatever.
It's fine. As it happens, Alan Foreman last night sent me a link to the piece in the Post. That Barry, sports writer Barry
Cerulea.
That sounds right, but it's hard. I think that
I probably said it wrong.
It's something like that. Hold on, I'll tell you right away, or maybe I won't, because I wrote it on the phone, so it's got to be here. Anyway, it's well intentioned and it's largely fair and accurate. And he says it's Preakness time, and the industry holds its breath. And you can tell that he actually is interested in the game and kind of likes the game. It's got the requisite miscues about things, calling therapeutic med overages drug positives. And frankly, this is something that even people that understand seem to do, let alone mainstream, quote unquote, sports writing. So that's a whole separate, a whole separate challenge that we've got. I wrote him a quick couple of paragraphs just saying, it seems like you like the game and you're kind of rooting for the game. He tried to convey the nuanced portions of HISA and this and that. So I just kind of touched on a couple of quick things with him. Anyway,
it's racing's job to educate them.
Well, it's hard because it's very complex. It's hard enough, John, to explain it to people who are invested and interested. I mean, I've got a luxury of 15 hours a week, so we delve into things and we cover topics in depth. The general public, you can't in a passing blow explain what's going on here, there's people that are championing, the HISA initiative, and there's certain merits of it, that do stand alone. But when they describe him, like in this piece in the Post, it doesn't talk about the Lasix motivation and the origin story or the grappling for control that is at the heart of the whole concept. That's what those nuances and those themes are going to escape any mainstream addressing of the topic. So anyway, I would rather talk about what is the potential here and how I for me going forward in this. On these grounds, as I said when I got that old hilltop, the Preakness is here. It is only going to be here. It belongs here. And if the future of the racing in Maryland is at Pimlico, it provides a lot of positives that could, go over the banks, essentially, and for the neighborhood and for those opportunity desires that the city has. I mean, there's a lot of things that could emanate from this positively. The potential to renovate Bowie as a training center. There's a lot of things that are there's a lot of seeds planted, and it'll be interesting to see which ones bear fruit.
Well, I like that you're speaking positively.
That's my mantra.
I mean, it's rough here. It's very rough. And I think, I don't know what you're asking me, but I would say this. The operative word that I think everyone needs to put into their head in Maryland racing is sacrifice. Everyone is going to lose a little bit of something that they like. And that's really hard. And it's really hard if you've been here a long time. And it's really hard if you've been here for a really, really long time. And you know, historically, Maryland is one of the premier racing states in the country. But it no longer is. And that is something that needs to be understood and accepted and say, wow, we've really diminished and we're really in a tough spot. And where can we sacrifice to go forward? And there's a lot of things coming from Maryland racing that aren't positive. You got Churchill Downs in your backyard now. And there, Churchill Downs is a pit bull in your backyard and there's no fence. And I'm talking about Colonial Downs operations now. They immediately, as soon as they buy it, they go, their first announcement is we're expanding racing dates.
Well, it's based on the expanded dates correspond to the number of HHR machinery. They can't just arbitrarily, they can't run 300 days. It's based on the formula of days per machine throughout the state.
Which is fine. But then they move their days off of their traditional schedule and move them to the weekend days that the Maryland tracks race at. So they're not going to be going there. What were they doing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday? They're going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They're coming right into the Maryland's wheelhouse. Then you got Delaware running at the same time. You got a finite number of horses. We all know that. So where's Maryland fit in? Where does Maryland fit in that? They're in a sandwich. I say sandwich with an M in honor of Clint Florio, who would say sandwich. But you got Delaware is the top slice. You got Colonials the bottom slice. Maryland's got a lot of issues going on.
Well, you didn't even include Parks in the equation either.
It's an ever-present, but at least the people from Parks sometimes ship down here and run.
Sure.
So it's a problem. This particular ownership of Maryland Racing wanted Laurel to be the centerpiece. They sank a lot of money into the second floor up there. You know, a lot went into the concept. They built out these whole plans with a railroad station, with a Pegasus statue at the entry, just like in Gulfstream, the future home of the Breeders' Cup. All this stuff is on paper. All this stuff is not happening.
Steve. No, it's old. That's old news. I mean, and you know, the various elements of that you know that come to play came to play. So it's immaterial. What is happening in Annapolis and what is happening here is all that matters, you know, going forward. That's all in terms of the breeding community here. You've got long-term commitment and you know, you've got Timonium. There's a lot of things that all the underpinnings are here.
The positives are there.
Yeah.
The will has to be there. I don't believe, I'd love to be wrong, that First really wants to be maybe racing in Maryland or racing in Pimlico, because they've never wanted to race at Pimlico. So that they've never wanted it. They never liked it from the get-go. They canceled the fall meet. I mean, it was like, what are y'all doing? So if they're going to remain involved, they're being pulled into being involved. So my issue that I've had, and I've been in Baltimore for 10 years, but I've been in Washington for many, many, many before that. My issue is that after Frank Stronach left leadership of this company never made any kind of serious commitment to promotion of racing in Baltimore. You never knew there was a race meet going on in the spring, and they continue to shorten it, except for Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Day. But there's other days running. You know, this is kind of like a... This is a working class town, and it's a hipster kind of town, right? Hipsters and horse racing is a good mix, right? Make it cool. There's so many partnership opportunities, and I just never saw them doing that legwork in a town where you see it being done by the Orioles and you see it being done by the Ravens, the efforts to move into the community. You can't take it for granted that you have a track that's 5 billion years old that I love, you know I love it, and expect people to just show up to an esoteric sport that the newspaper doesn't even understand. You got to go and sell them. You got to bring them in. You got to grab them.
Yeah, no doubt.
So if you're going to make the commitment to do the rebuild here, that's got to be part of it, is a commitment. And I blame the Racing Commission because they don't hold the tracks operators' feet to the fire. What the commission should say is you run at the pleasure of the commission. You need to commit a certain amount of dollars to marketing. So we never see the commitment to marketing dollars. So that's how you're going to win. That's how you're going to win in Baltimore. And in Maryland, and I know no one's going to enjoy hearing this. I certainly know the horsemen don't want to hear this. I don't think we're a year-round racing state anymore. And I think we would benefit in the long run from not being a year-round racing state. One, you build up money in your SIMO purse account.
True. That's true.
Two, if you're not going to rotate, okay, here's the great thing about Kentucky. Churchill ends, and then you go to Keeneland, yeah. Then you go to Ellis. Blah, blah. You're moving around, and there's an excitement of renewal throughout the year. When you're racing at Laurel year-round with an undistinguished stakes program, the monotony begins to set in. Yeah. So the movement is excitement because now it's open. Opening is a new word. That's a word of new.
Yeah.
So if you race not year-round and Pimlico's opening for the spring meet, and then you take the summer off, and then you run at Timonium, and then after Timonium, Pimlico's running for the fall meet. All of a sudden, there's excitement. A race meet, and you know this, a race meet does best when there is a progression through the meet to its highlights, and it means something. It's not parks where you're just a racing factory. Keeneland is so super exciting because it's condensed.
I like it fine. Comparing anything to Keeneland is unfair. And whenever I hear that, they should be more like Keeneland. Oh, really? All the racetracks should operate a sales company that basically pays for the purses?
Right, you're right.
It's just silly. And now, of course, they've got the HHR on top of that. Delmar's closer, and Alan Foreman yesterday talked about the nonprofit model and what that could mean as a format for here long term. You're absolutely right about breaking up monotony and having this is something I think they've learned. Santa Anita struggles with this a little bit. It's now Oaklawn with this expanded meet I think they've lost just a little bit of the attention factor, racing 3 days a week for that protracted period.
Agreed.
As opposed to 4 days a week from mid-January to mid-April. It's hard. It's hard to maintain attention and momentum and the excitement. So you got to pick. You got to pick your spots. Overall, you've got a calendar and standards in Maryland. That are historic. Whether you talk about the sprint. Winter fall season sprint program and the Laurel Futurity and the Salima, and there are lots of things, lots of places on the calendar that can serve as the building blocks for whatever revised program. But if it's going to be on this site, I'm all for it.
Me too.
And the property. Let's be honest. The property at Anne Arundel. You got physical problems with the watershed and the wetland swampy issue that has plagued the track, frankly. So go develop it into retail and residential and maximize. Let them benefit financially from that, and if it's going to be maybe the horsemen and the state and something quasi similar to NYRA and New York, that's fine for here. It would be great. I've talked to Alan. I'd love to be involved in something like that. Anyway, John, let me I got a couple of minutes because I got to get Nick Tamaro and Rick Hammerly in yet, as well as I got to get a call to Tony Black. Any opinions? Any thoughts? The race loses had a chunk taken out of it this morning.
It did, and I was a little disappointed because I thought, I think Louis Size is the greatest rider in the country. I'll stand by that.
That's fine.
At least at
no,
this point
no argument
in time.
Here.
What I thought was he was going to look at this and go, Coffee with Chris is a horse that ran in the Tessio. I got Brad Cox's horse. I'm going to the front. And I thought he was going to light out from outside and take the lead. That was my impression of this. Now with him out, the pace becomes a cloudier scenario. You know, Coffee with Chris, a really interesting horse, because he's got legitimate speed. If you go into the third grass, his numbers are pretty decent. He's not that far behind.
No, he's not. You're right.
He's going to have a say in this thing. But now what do you do if you're National Treasure? You're just going to, you know, are you all going to cede the lead to Coffee with Chris? All of a sudden, you got a decision to make. Is that what we want to do? Because what's our best way to beat Mage? I have a handicapping rule. The shorter the field, the more dangerous the speed. Okay? Because with less pressure on the pace animal, they run their best races. It's a time-tested that a loose horse on the lead is going to run his top number. So, if you're Baffert and National Treasure, who are an obvious talent, who have been coming up short race after race, granted against excellent horses like Cave Rock and, I'm saying Breeders' Cup. He wasn't going to win those races. But the Santa Anita race was a little troubling, but he finishes up really strong. Why is he idling on the turn? Not good.
Yeah.
But so the reason I bring all this up is, why don't you send to the front from the rail? He's got the speed.
He seems one pace to me. He doesn't have the Baffert acceleration, the sort of, light on his feet, kind of
blinkers on.
Well, that's nice. That's no guarantee. that might be a guarantee of focus. It doesn't make the legs move necessarily any different. He has not. This is a horse who quickly reached a certain level and has not taken a step forward yet. Listen, it doesn't mean he can't. And changing up the approach can wake horses up or get them to, involved in a different way. That's not a bad MO. But I just think he's... We're dealing with... When it comes to the Derby winner, you're dealing with a horse who... first of all, if you run that Florida Derby 100 times, he beats Forte several times. If Forte would have gone favored last Saturday, two Saturdays ago, and now this horse has reached another level and does not look to have had anything taken out of him.
Wait a minute. I didn't realize you'd ask me who I thought was going
to
win the race.
Oh, there you go. All right. You're talking scenario. All right. Well, then you got 3 minutes to make your case.
Well, look, there's two horses I think are going to win this race. Look, I kind of want to say Blazing Sevels because he's the only other Grade 1 winner. The Preakness, because no one wants to come on and run here from the Derby anymore, which is time-tested, proven. The horses that do best in the Preakness are the horses that come from the Derby.
Of course.
Maybe you have to redo the schedule. I've never been a fan of that, but maybe it's going to happen. What you said is the truth, though. The horses that come here are horses looking to find out what kind of horses they are. They've already shown they're really good, but are they really, really good? That we don't know. So if you're going to try to take a shot at Mage, you got to say, oh, who's the most likely to be real? That's it. So to me, the most likely to be real is National Treasure. In terms of speed, he debuted, he went 21-4, 44-1, but he's got on the lead. So he's obviously fast now. He has the blinkers. He's in the right barn. I'm only going too deep here. I think Mage is legit. I picked him to come. I thought he was one of four horses in Kentucky that would come in last. I hated the way he looked in the morning. I got punished. So I'm no longer worried about what he looks like. I'm worried about what he does. Scenario doesn't favor him as much with the lack of speed now, but he looks good enough to win based on talent alone.
Well, if you're gonna quote splits, look at his splits in his debut win.
We're talking about
Mage.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I just picked him to win.
I picked him to win. I'm saying the scenario, he didn't necessarily, we haven't necessarily seen, his different
capabilities,
yes.
His tactical capabilities.
There's enough evidence there, and also the way he's drawn is very advantageous because he's going to be able to watch and deal with what transpires. Javier's going to see Johnny and a national treasure right in front of him. And he can basically, you know, tuck in, stay if he wants to stay, you know, right behind, or he wants to draft off, see who else is going to come over. Is Coffee with Chris going to show up, and is he fast enough to keep up? Then there's Blazing Sevens maybe used for some speed.
Castellano's written here enough not to know what he's doing here for the first time, but the Gulfstream Oval is a markedly different oval than this. It's similar to the Laurel Oval. Don't fall too far back here, Mage. Don't fall too hard. Don't leave a lot of work for yourself.
No, can't do it. And of course, the banking, the banking here does not provide for they. We've actually gone. Seems like the whole week without any. There's been very minimal reference to the awful two words that I hate of horses that are making their Triple Crown debut. That term,
the new blank.
Yes, I chafe, and we haven't had. I haven't seen any silly tight turn conversations. But usually, when Tony Black, I usually have Tony Black explain to everybody how that myth got started, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't based on the turns themselves, but the banking of the track. It's a much flatter, the crown here is much flatter than it is at most racetracks. And so it seems like the turns are quote unquote tight because horses can't bank as easily. They can't negotiate turns, especially big kind of, you know, lopey type horses,
right?
Because they don't have the banking like you see at a NASCAR track.
If you want to get old a second, that it took Easy Goer to get to the Belmont to really show what kind of horse he was.
Because of the
sweeping,
slow,
tougher. Yep,
the big, wide
turns. By the way, I thought you used the word crown because I took my hat off.
Oh! Unbelievable. John Scheinman, everybody.
A lot of dead air after that line.
Exactly. No, that was good. Always fabulous.
Great seeing you back in Baltimore. You're good up here. I wish this was your permanent office. It's nice. People don't know where we're at, but we're in one of the offices down the side of the hallway in the Pimlico press box. There's like four of these beautiful offices. The end one is where you can do a lot of research on some good old materials.
The clip books.
But this is a great spot for you.
10, 12, 14, I don't know how many years I've done the show from this venue and from this particular spot. I did not get as many I got very few pictures out this week. More so, a lot of times I'd sit and hang and schmey dre, but I've been sort of on the go all week this week. Went out to Maryland on Wednesday, Country Life yesterday.
Yeah, I missed the party.
That was fun. Really nice.
Yeah, I missed
really
it.
Really nice.
I missed it. I would say, in the words of A. Bartlett Giamatti, take time for paradise.
Well put. John Scheinman, everybody. Are you, no Twitter? Yeah, there's Twitter for you.
No.
You gave it up. You came in, you made an entry, and you left on Twitter.
Yeah, I left when Musk.
Ah, that, well, then would love to do the same, to be honest, but you know, you gotta hang in. John, thank you. No, we're on. I'm reaching for Tony right now. That's the luck, John Scheinman. Always tremendous. We're gonna get Tony in and waiting to hear from Nick Tamaro, who's had a busy morning. He had parent teacher. Conference at school. That's why we couldn't get with Nick earlier. So we'll get Nick and we'll get Hammer. And I really should reach Seth Merrow as well. Tony Black, we were just talking about you.
You know what? I just left the doctor's office and I haven't had you on, and I just got your text message. So I don't know what you said, but I hope it was all good. You've had some really good shows, so I didn't feel bad that you didn't have me on.
Well, it's been a kind of an unusual week to a slight degree, but Tony, what I invoked with you was your annual visit when it comes to Pimlico and all the times you won a lot of races here, and your explanation of banking and why it's tough for some horses to get around here because the crown of the track, we don't have the angle of degrees that you do at most ovals.
Yeah, the banking. It's a flat turn. You know, it's the same circumference as many of your other, you know, racetracks. But it's a flat turn with no bank. And, of course, horses have a little trouble at times, depending on the individual, you know, of picking up momentum around that turn. And Pimlico has that, you know, reputation of favoring speed. Well, it's because speed horses are already in front. And the horses that have to catch you have to build up momentum, and then you come to the stretch. Well, it's hard to build up momentum on a flat turn where the bank doesn't hold you in. You know, so a lot of times horses will try to pick up momentum and they'll start to spread the turn because it's flat. And it does favor speed horses. And, of course, I was always known as a speed jock, so I loved Pimlico. Anything that favored speed, I loved. You know, when they floated racetracks, I loved that because that favored speed. But it'll be interesting to see what kind of a speed scenario there is in the Preakness, and it'll be interesting to see just how coordinated this horse may get. You know, I like horses that win the Derby coming to the Preakness. So, you know, I'm kind of favoring Mage, and, you know, it's a horse that I don't think will have any problem negotiating those turns and building momentum. But every once in a while, you'll get a speed horse that really takes to that flat turn, and they're tough to catch up that stretch.
Tony, only one Preakness ride for you, but it was a pretty momentous one, and that was Deadly Dream. I mentioned the other day, fifth in Secretariat's Preakness.
And I'm right in the middle of Secretariat's, the three horse. I'm the two horse, and Sham was the one horse. And, you know, at the time it didn't seem like it was that big of a deal, because, you know, everybody thought Secretariat was just such a super horse, which he proved out to be such a super horse. And I was right in the middle of his main competition, Sham. Because, what, did Sham beat him in the wood, I believe? Or they had met before, Sham and Secretariat.
Sure.
And I think Sham, I think, beat him once. I believe he did, you know. But anyway, I was right in the middle. And of course, somebody saved a picture of the start gate and of a Sham set me on Deadly Dream's Secretariat, and I use it as my screenshot on Facebook. But I never thought it was that important at the time. But years later, when you look back on that, you know, and I always think about Secretariat, you know, watch being next to him when he broke. He kind of broke like lackadaisical, almost flat-footed, not left, but not real sharp, the first jumps out of there. And we went into the first turn. Of course, I was in front of him. I think I was in front of most of them. And here comes Secretariat in a big old open common gallop, just galloping around us in the first turn. By the time we hit near the end of the first turn, he was just well in control. And at the time, I'm thinking, man, that's an early premature move. Horses that don't break real good and get rushed up. Well, he wasn't rushed up. He was just outputting everybody. That's what kind of a stride he had. He wasn't rushed up. You know, Ronnie Durkot, one of the great riders of all time, didn't rush him up because he broke flat-footed or not real sharp. He just outpowered. He was just overpowering. And then, of course, he just went and proved just how good he was after he won the Preakness and in the Belmont. Just overpowering his competition.
Well, both in the Derby and Preakness, you're part of it, and they're celebrating. In fact, there's, for those that are coming here tomorrow, the Secretariat.com, Leonard Lusky, and the family, the Chenery family, they've got a moving, a roving museum that they've created, an exhibit that's right in the lobby when you come into the grandstand, right, you know, where all the vendors are. And they've got plenty of Secretariat items, you know, that they also sell. But the museum, it looks really clever. I hope to get a chance today before I have to go. I've got to pick up Tina later. I'm going to end up missing the Black Eyed Susan because Tina gets in like right around post time. So.
You better not be late for that or you'll be in hot weather. And you know what? My son called me the other day and he says, Dad, he says, you know the Secretariat movie that Disney made? I guess it's Disney. And I says, yeah. He says, you know, they show the actual footage of the Preakness. And I sat there with my friends. We watched the movie, and I showed them where you were on Deadly Dreams. I said, you mean it was the actual footage of the race? He says, yeah. yeah, you're a movie star. You're in the actual secretary. He said, well, I didn't know that. I'm not going to have to watch that movie.
That's
right. I said, how I look? He said, you look like I remember you. You sent your horse out of there, and you were laying right there, and you looked like Tony Black.
Exactly.
But it's something, you know, years later, you know, something that didn't seem of great importance at the time, and it's not of great importance, but it's a great memory to me.
Sure.
You know, just thinking about that race and the way Secretariat just looped us and went on about his business and turned out to be the great horse that everybody thought he was at the time and proved it. You know, so I kind of, unexpectedly, I was part of that historical moment, the Preakness. And I only rode one Preakness, and I was fortunate enough to ride two Derbies. But I'll never forget coming down the stretch. Ecole Etage was in front of me, and I'm trying desperately to get past George Cusimano. And him and me are fighting it out for fourth and fifth money coming down the stretch. And he held up, and Ecole Etage was fourth and beat me kind of like a head or whatever. Not much for fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
At the time, I just wanted to be fourth. And years later, I said, well, at least I didn't ride those races many times. But I was fourth once in the Derby in the 20-horse field. Now I could have said I was fourth in the Preakness, but I wasn't. I was fifth. And George is probably looking down and saying, well, I'm glad I beat you, because that's a claim that I have of something that was important. George Cusimano was a good old Merlin rider, one of Buddy Delp brought him out. And he met an early death in a car accident at Delaware Park.
Yep.
But, you know, those memories, they mean something.
Absolutely. Know? Of course they do. Of course they do. Now, Tony, I couldn't let Preak this week go by without a visit. And so you're trying to get the Derby winner around and get us a Triple Crown try.
Racing needs it. We need some excitement, like a Triple Crown expectation. You know, even if it doesn't come that way, I want to see at least a few weeks after the Preakness of people really thinking, boy, there could be another Triple Crown winner. And you know what? There could be. Who knows?
Well, Tony, I appreciate it. We'll check in next week. We'll do some recapping. We'll see where we stand. Tony Black. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Steve. You take care. Great shows you've had the last few days and always. So take care.
I appreciate it. Tony Black, everybody. That one Preakness try. And I mean, Tony won tons of races here. He spent, you know, a good portion of his career here before getting back to Jersey and Philly. But the 70s, I don't know, 72 to 70, I think, when did he came down here? He's talked about it a million times. But I think his big, you know, it's funny, his biggest wins came more at Laurel. Like he won the Salima on Candy Clare, the Campbell. He won the John Campbell. Tony won his share of. I don't know if he won the Laurel Futurity, but he's won his share of Maryland Stakes. Nick Tamaro, who's now you're in the groove with parent teacher conferences. Oh, look at you.
Well, this was just a school tour, so we're getting there. We're my daughter is going to be in a 3-year-old pre-K program in the fall. So it was, she adapted a lot better than her mother did, I can tell you that much.
I love it. Well, no, they love, you know, I know from Tina, I mean, the kids love going, and we're going to, there's a real chance that I'm going to be with the grandchildren as early as tomorrow morning. We're looking at grandchild 3 square in the eye. So we'll know more this afternoon and tomorrow morning. So
very exciting. Many congrats and good luck with all of it. I would have stayed in school forever, to be honest. So I'm glad my daughter seems to be as interested in school as she is. So I could have easily been a lifetime student.
Well, you're a student of the game, and everybody looking forward to some thoughts. Before we talk about Saturday, I mean, what was your view of the two cards, Nick, in terms of, you know, viability and, you know, we got all these rolling pick fives. What's your suggested approach to the 2 days?
I thought today's card was probably a little bit more potentially lucrative. I definitely liked more horses at decent prices today than tomorrow. And originally my plan was to kind of anchor the majority of my multi-race plays into First Mission, which obviously that point's moot now. But so I thought there was a little bit more approachability to today's card. I like Cook Creek in the Pimlico special, and I wanted to kind of fool around with him, you know, mainly under Rattle and Roll if I can't get him home all the way, but play a lot of multis through there. Because the other thing I thought was that, I mean, FaZe is going to be very, very tough to beat. And I feel very comfortable about having FaZe as a lone A and then just having the 1-8-10 as backups. And they should, at least Sacred Wish and Tax should be decent enough prices. I'm not sure how much of a price Balcony is going to be. So that was kind of my thought on today. You and I were texting about the Maple Leaf Mel and Key of Life matchup. That's probably more of a race for viewing than betting. But I do think if you have a lean on Maple Leaf Mel, or especially if you have one on somebody other than those two, then you definitely want to play that race for sure, because you're just going to have an ability to create a ton of value. And I think Key of Life might have peaked last time. I didn't love her race overall, and I don't necessarily love her prospects of going 6 furlongs, taking heat right from the start. So just kind of a general overview of today. Tomorrow, I do think the Pick 5 sequence has some favorites that might be a little bit tough to beat, but I think that, you know, we're obligated to try because there are some interesting enough alternatives.
Nick, let me let you know, Cook Creek came out of the special.
Oh, great to know. Yeah, well, of course, I hadn't marked my scratches yet, so it's good that I went on that soliloquy.
That's all right. I mean, he's the only horse that came out, the Jerry O'Dwyer. In fact, I think Rosario lost a few mounts today. But, of course, the Pletcher pair bypassing the Black Eyed Susan altogether. You and I have a virtually identical view of the Susan. I thought Law Professor would overwhelm this group ultimately in the special.
Yeah, I mean, he might be a little bit much. It's funny, he ran so well in those two races at Aqueduct, and he ran so poorly at Oaklawn. I mean, it makes no sense, and it doesn't. You know, maybe he is a horse who's better without Lasix. That could be the situation. It's kind of funny if you put his PPs next to Balpool's. Maybe Rob Atrus is a guy whose horses don't really run as well outside of New York. You know, in many cases you see trainers who do well everywhere else but New York. But that could be the other thing too. But yeah, I mean, the good Law Professor, the version that we saw a couple of times over the winter at Aqueduct would be very, very tough for this.
Pick some spots, and now with First Mission, how do you think the riders react now in terms of pace? I mean, somebody's got to fill in the void, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that Coffee with Chris will push National Treasure. I mean, I think this is a total one-way trip for National Treasure, right? He is going straight to the front. And the interesting thing about National Treasure is that you hear all the discussion of him being a little bit inconsistent when he's stalking the pace and he kind of runs in spots and so on and so forth. Now he's adding blinkers in a race where he has the rail, so there's one job: go out and get the lead. And I'll admit, Steve, I think he's dangerous. I was going to tweet that one man stands between Mage and A Date with Destiny, and of course that man is Bob Baffert. So I think National Treasure will go to the lead. I think Coffee with Chris will stalk him. I think the pace will be honest. And, you know, I expect that there'll be a group of horses, probably a couple, 2 to 4 lengths off of those, and I think that'll include Mage. Because even though Mage dropped way back in the Kentucky Derby, you know, I saw somebody tweet the other day, is Mage more like I'll Have Another, or is he more like Orb? And in that sense, he's much more like I'll Have Another. He's a horse that was taken as far back in the Kentucky Derby as he was because of the pace, whereas Orb was just a plotter, right? Orb was a grinder who was always going to come from way out of it. And if you put him in a situation where he had to try and run down an isolated leader, he was going to be in big, big trouble. And that's why he lost the Preakness in the manner in which he did. So I think Mage will be tactical enough to stay close. And quite honestly, Steve, push comes to shove, I think we're going to be with about 80,000 of our friends in New York in 3 weeks.
I think Mage is going to win
very easily.
I agree, and I actually had kind of come to that conclusion with or without First Mission. So All right. Let's back up then and talk about this pick five, because there's some really fun races. The Murphy is a fun race.
Yeah, the Murphy's not a bad race at all. I like a big price who might not get much more than a share of it, but I have to use him a little bit in the pick five. I'm not sure how much this horse, first of all, I'm not sure how good he is, but Moonstrike's trip last time out of Keeneland was an absolute nightmare. And he really had no chance whatsoever. And I think he's going to get a better trip this time around. I think he can be more tactical. And I think he's going to be a huge price, so I have to use him. I think Nagarok is very much the horse to beat. I keep hearing a lot of chatter on Wonderful Justice and the supposed difficult trip that he had, and I didn't really see it last time out of Keeneland. I know people are inclined to upgrade all the Transylvania horses because of the way that Webslinger ran in his next start, so it was. He's just a horse that I don't have a great amount of affinity for, so I'll mainly use the 6 and 9, and then I expect Nagarok to beat. Pretty tough to beat, but I'll slide Moonstrike in there underneath.
Wonderful Justice has come up repeatedly this morning. That's a clever reference on Moonstrike. My goofy price in there is Kingfish Stevens, who that effort in New York puts him right in this.
Yeah, I think he's a horse that's going to be well-backed also. New York form is always pretty well-respected. And you've got high percentage connections there too, so I'm expecting him to be pretty dangerous as well.
Well, I mean, you put a line through those dirt races, and
yeah, they're meaningless. Exactly.
He's as good as anybody, and he's going to be. I mean, morning line wise, he's 8-1, and I think he'll be every bit of that. You know, with Wesley Ward and Maker and everybody else. Well, Maker's a price in there too. This is a fun race. The Murphy's always been, I don't know, for me, on a regular basis, I feel like, apocryphally, I've found prices in it over the years. You know, the Maryland Sprint is sort of a three-year-old, three-and-up dirt version of that. There's some prices that we've had crazy horses get reference the last couple of days. What'd you come up with here?
I think this is a race where it's ripe for a price because I think Straight No Chaser is a horse that's going to be horribly overbet off of setting a very soft pace at Oaklawn, and I think that he's a horse that you want to take a stand against. He's going to face way more early pressure than he did in his last start, so I'm inclined to take a shot against him. I thought both Brittany Russell horses were dangerous. Hell Hot Rod and Wonder Where Craig Is. Wonder Where Craig Is obviously has back form that's going to be very, very tough to beat. I don't know if he's capable of running back to that level. I thought Hell Hot Rod's last race was excellent. He made a big move off the turn, got run down late, but all things considered, put forth an effort that I think speed figure-wise, company-wise, it puts him right in line with these. So it's, it's going to be a real opportunity, I think. I also thought that the locally based Al Loves Josie had a little bit of a shot.
That's my choice.
Draw a line through that Frank Whiteley, losing all chance at the start, and that presents an opportunity for that horse moving forward as well. So, yeah, I'm going to try the prices in here. I've never really been a big Nakatomi fan. And I'll tell you the other thing, word of warning on Nakatomi. This horse took no money at Keeneland last time. And when Wesley's horses take no money, they almost never run. And he didn't run at all. I mean, he didn't. That running line belies the performance. It probably inflates the performance, I should say. He didn't run well at all. So, it's a matter of just getting him to a point where he could be a horse that could beat you, especially because it's going to be a short price.
What did you make of Prevalence's presence in this spot?
And I just feel like his best days are behind him. I'd love to try him because his best races are more than good enough. But it's a situation where, he's not. I just don't know if he's ready to step forth with the kind of effort that's needed.
Because I pulled out. I went looking for formulator stats. I was like, what is he doing in here? And then those two bullets getting ready for this. And it's not like, it's not like there isn't. This is a $100,000 stake, and it's not like there isn't, conditional allowances at Churchill that
you know, for $130,000, he could stay home and run. So why, you know, why is he here? It's one of those, you know, why is this horse in this spot kind of a question. What about the Jim McKay, where we've got a field of 13, and we got some, you know, regional players. We've got some imports, like Phil D'Amato showing up with Beer Can Man. How many more tries does our Artemis City Limits get? This one is a challenge, and it's leg C of the all-stakes pick five.
I have to try Smokin' Jay one more time. I know that his Keeneland race last time, and generally I don't like horses with this kind of profile coming in off a poor effort. But, you know, he seems like a horse that is going to be able to sit back and make one run in a race absolutely loaded with speed. And I can't, as in my handicapping style, take horses like Nothing Better or some of the other front runners that just have one way to go, and they're going to try and blast off from the start. And, you know, I just don't know if that's going to be, I don't know if that's going to be the recipe for success. So I'm going to use Coppola and Smokin' Jay primarily. I'll sprinkle in a little bit of Beer Can Man. I'm not going to let Nothing Better beat me, but he's a horse that I don't have a great affinity for at a relatively short price. So that's the approach I'm going to take. And, you know, I'm usually wrong in these turf sprints where I think there's going to be a big pace and it's going to set up for somebody from off of it. But that's the way it looks.
I thought Coppola too was very embraceable. Coppola, I'm going to use the prices as A's and the obvious as B's. That was my thought, and that gets us
Coppola's
to this.
Coppola's last race was sensational.
Yeah,
it was very, very good. I mean, if he runs back to that, they're all in trouble.
I completely agree. Talk about the one race, the Ski Pat, has not gotten much attention, but it's another good race. And as you mentioned, this sequence, and I know everybody will be focused on what happened to the Preakness, but you're talking about a sequence that's 10 by 13 by 10 by 9 by 7, and very competitive sprint sequence with the Ski Pat, the Turf Sprint, and the Maryland Sprint. And here's a 10 horse field where there's no obvious answer.
Yeah, I agree. This is a race where I picked Gunning. I like Gunning. I like the cutback. My concern, of course, is that it's generally not very easy to make up a bunch of ground at Pimlico. And this is a weekend. This is a day specifically where we've seen speed play extremely well over the years. So I'm a little concerned in that respect, and that might relegate Gunning to more of a bit player. We'll see what they do with Begwin, who's also entered it at Belmont on Saturday and could end up going there. It's an allowance race versus this, maybe as a prep for the Bed of Roses. So if you have any info on where Begwin's going, then certainly chime in. But I mean, I assume if you enter in a stake, you want to run in a stake. But yeah, we'll see where that goes. But it looked like there was plenty of pace in here to me, and I thought that I wanted a horse that would be coming from off of it. So I was willing to try Gunning it. What should be a decent price with Flavian Pratt.
Well, there you go. There's the pick five sequence. The rest of the card, fairly mundane before that. I mean, in terms of some of the, you know, the strong either favorites or horses that kind of stand out, Hurricane Dream maybe in the dinner party, and obviously Having a Meltdown is going to take some beating, I think. Super Chow's presence is worth noting. Anything else on the rest of the card that you want to mention?
Yeah, I like Speaking Scout in a dinner party.
Okay.
I thought he was, you know, obviously you want horses that made a run and were pace compromised in that Maker's Mark Mile. And I mean, the difference in the field quality of the Maker's Mark Mile in this race is just night and day. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be very difficult to keep this horse, I think, out of the trifecta. And he's going to be arguably the best price of the motion horses, maybe save Easter, who'll be a little bit longer price. And I don't trust a tone at all. I mean, they're going to make a tone the favorite. He might get loose on the front end. He was abysmal at Fairgrounds. And so unless you can come up with a pretty good excuse for why he ran so poorly at Fairgrounds, I'm also almost to a runner going to end up taking a critical approach to Mike Maker's horses who blossomed in Florida. They don't seem like they're carrying their game with them.
NTAM 1215. Nick, I appreciate it. Good luck this weekend. Any out-of-town additions? Anything that people should be aware of?
No, still working on all that, but there'll be plenty on Belmont on InTheMoneyPodcast.com, and certainly tweet to me if you have any pearls of wisdom.
Yeah, perfect. And I just reached out to Ned Allard to see about Beguine, if we can get an answer before we get off the air. Either way, I'll let you know.
Perfect. I appreciate it.
Nick Tamaro, folks. Nick, thanks a lot.
Thank you, buddy.
Nick Tamaro, folks. There you go. And let's round it out. We'll get to Hammer, and we'll spend the last 10 minutes of the morning with Rick. And it occurs to me that that Rick might have, I guess he said he wasn't, this wasn't going to be on the agenda, but New York will be. You don't have to worry about that. Well, Hammer, if you're listening, you've got to call me again. This is the same problem. Like the numbers, like Hammer's, and Hammer's got two phones. and I can't, I don't know what, that's 2 weeks in a row that it says I can't reach the customer. It's very strange. All right. If I had held Nick on the line a couple minutes more or seconds more, we would have found out that in fact Ned Allard is running Beguine in the race at Belmont. So you can take Beguine out of the ski pat, scratch the 3-1 favorite Beguine out of the ski pat. All right. So you're ahead of the curve on that, thanks to Ned. And here's Hammer now. Good morning.
Good morning, Baltimore.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Like a radio show.
Exactly. Well, winding down here, I picked up a couple scratches yesterday. I for the Black Eyed Susan, I was all over Miracle. I was looking for a Miracle upset today, but I guess that is out of the question, right?
Yeah.
You know, off that second to Pretty Mischievous, but we'll go. I don't know. Now I don't know how you beat the Faiza. I was trying there. As far as that goes, real quickly here over to the Preakness with the scratch of the outside horse. You know, I had one of those visions of a Preakness about 40 years ago, Cowboy Jack Canal on the Lomas Ruler.
Yeah.
For some reason, I woke up this morning and I went right to the computer to turn it on and I watched the race again. And for some reason, I had thought that he had started from the rail, but he didn't. He was on the far outside of a 7-horse field. And when, of course, went wire to wire and beat a horse called Linkage, who was the big favorite that day with Shoemaker in the irons. But, you know, can National Treasure pull in a Lomas Ruler? That's what kind of came to mind. I don't know, but I see the race between those two horses, Mage and National Treasure. Mage might just be too good for all of them, and which, you know, we'll see what happens. But that's the way it comes down to it for me on those two races. The two scratches really was a big deal.
It's fair, and you know, that has been the watchword, more or less, since Derby weekend. And you know, Hammer, one thing that we haven't talked about, I don't know how many more opinions you've got to offer, but you talk to plenty of racing official types. How do you solve the horse placement, the stakes coordination issue, when we look at the Derby to Preakness conundrum? Because if there hadn't been all the scratches, which may be the new normal that we're going to have to get used to, you would have had another three or four Derby
also eligibles that would be running here. It feels like this is an anomaly.
It is. You know, you're talking. I'm not sure where you were going with what you just said there. As far as there's too many stakes run, you're talking about between Derby Day and Preakness Day.
Well, I mean, the idea that, you know, people think that you know that this is some sort of evidence of a you know a major problem that only one Derby horse participating in the Preakness and this is going to be. You know, where we are going forward, what do we do? You know, it reinvigorates the breed is falling apart and oh, we got to change the date. And then Jay Pribman yesterday, I think, slapped everybody around and said, you know, we've had two Triple Crown winners in the last 8 years. It's not like it's 1969 and we've been waiting for 30 years.
I think this talk comes up every year, regardless. You know, we could have six, and hey, we should have had more than six, type of thing. And I agree with you. I think it's just a fluke that we had one this year, just the way it came down. I think at some point there's going to be discussion on not just the Triple Crown, but just on a lot of things that maybe need to be looked at as changing things around. I don't know if this is at the top of the list. But there does probably need to be some changes in the game as a whole to try and stir things up a little bit. But I don't think this widespread panic needs to be spread for this, for sure. Let's just go ahead and enjoy Preakness weekend and do the Belmont and see what happens. But I agree with you. Just a one-off doesn't mean it. We've had some pretty good competition with the Derby Preakness in the past. So let's just see what happens here. Enjoy the weekend. More concerning to me is the 20 scratches on the card today. And, you know, hoping that, less than that happens tomorrow, not just handicapping wise, you know, you do the work and then, you know, you got to draw a line through horses you like, but just the fact that there's that many scratches on the card and like you said, becoming the normal, that doesn't bode well. So that's more concerning to me than anything else.
Well, and some, to be fair, some of these scratches were, I mean, obviously there's MTOs and there's AEs, but some of the healthy scratches, or not, you know, well, when I say healthy scratches out of the body of races, there I did notice a couple that were actually dirt horses that were entered in turf races with an eye on maybe races coming off the grass if the rain came early. You know, there had, you know, don't forget, they entered these cards Sunday, Monday. So some people, I think, were watching the weather.
Yeah, well, I didn't count that. That was 20 that didn't count MTOs and AEs. So,
all right. Well, there's also
a healthy number.
Well, there was also like cheekiness, for instance. Jamie Ness had cheekiness as part of an entry with Respectfully, and it's obvious that cheekiness, who was not an MTO, was entered in case in case that second level allowance came off.
I understand. It's just more than should be, and it just kind of, you know, takes a bite out of some of these fields. And anyway, they got 28 races put together in 2 days. You know, that's a pretty good testament to the support that Maryland always gives this weekend. So, you know, let's just support it, and we'll move on to Belmont, where I will see you there at Belmont.
Yes,
for sure.
Absolutely.
I it's funny. I looked at the calendar the other day, and you know, well, you go to the Preakness, I forgot. I've got a couple of tonight. I'm going to see a first time new show, Billy Strings. If anybody doesn't know who Billy Strings is, check out YouTube. He's a phenomenal guitar player in the bluegrass genre. And then Dead & Company, of course, on Saturday.
Fun. Nice.
Yeah.
Hammer.
The show.
Let me pull
the double
up.
Dip.
Nice. Enjoy. And we'll recap next week. And we'll start building to Hollywood Gold Cup as well at Santa Anita. Good luck, Hammer.
Good luck to everyone this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, Steve.
You got it. Away they go, Rick Hammerly, folks, and away we go. A wonderful week here at Baltimore. Thanks to everybody at MJC and Dave Joseph and everything that they do to take care of us up here. I love it here. And we'll see about tomorrow. I have no idea yet when Tina will let me know
if we're making a beeline to Rochester for the baby. We're going to make a beeline, though, to the windows for today's card. I think I got most of the changes set. So at the website, you also got to get the thank yous in. Scott Shapiro and James Scully, Twin Spires Weekend Preview, Dave Grenning, John Scheinman, which was fun, Hammer and Nick and Tony Black. All right, good luck, everybody, today and tomorrow, whether you're playing Pimlico or anything else. Hi-ho, talk to you Monday. I'm going to be home for 2 weeks. I don't know, I'm not going to know what to do with myself. Talk to you Monday.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to...